Now is one of those moments. Yet again.
Our political editor, Chris Mason. BBC News.
And the news was read by Charles Carroll. A smorgasbord of stand-up, memoir and philosophy as we join Alexi Seal from behind the counter of his imaginary sandwich bar. 6.30 Comedy is next.
Brand new drama on BBC iPlayer.
Why didn't I appreciate ordinary life? How fragile it all was. Holiday! You thought you were choosing your life. But actually, you were just heading towards that moment.
I don't know what's going on. Did you see what happened?
Men, 5 or 6 of them killing people.
What's happening? You have to tell us.
There's an emergency.
They've gone inside their hotel.
This way, in here.
Starring Keely Hawes.
If only I'd known, it was always going to end like this.
Crossfire. Watch tonight on BBC iPlayer.
Now on Radio 4, with typically uncompromising views, it's the first in a brand new series of Alexi Seal's Imaginary Sandwich Bar.
Recently, I have been transferring a large number of old VHS tapes to a modern digital format. When you are going from analog to digital, you have to do it in real time. So I've been watching on a screen all these television appearances of mine recorded off the air since about 1980. Yet I constantly find myself neglecting to watch my own performances, and I'm instead drawn to the fragments of long-forgotten commercials and news broadcasts that bracket the various shows that I was on. What's truly incredible about watching these ancient news broadcasts, say, is that the big headline story of the night, some event that seemed to be of enormous importance at the time, has now been totally forgotten, certainly by me, and I'm sure by you too. For example, who now remembers the time in 1986 when a herd of cows took over London's County Hall, where they issued more and more desperate calls for mankind to respect the environment until they were finally massacred by a squad of balaclava-wearing SAS men? It was an enormous story at the time, but who recalls it now? You don't, do you? And on the advertising front, do you recall Wrigley's bum-flavoured gum? In 1985, there was a gigantic promotional campaign on TV for this product. And the television ad's hilarious tagline, "Chew my bottom, Arthur," was on everybody's lips. And comedians flogged the catchphrase to death. After 18 or 19,000 repetitions, the jokes started to wear thin and the product vanished from our shelves. Ah, here we are at my imaginary sandwich bar.
Behold my sandwich bar. Peps at bargain prices, where all you cheats and thieves and liars come for rolls and custard slices. Cause humanity is cant and vanity, but underneath it all, a man's a man which does enjoy his daily sandwich.
Hello everybody, I'm Alexi Seal and welcome to my imaginary sandwich bar! Over here is the pretend counter, behind me is the illusory coffee machine, and in front of me the non-existent customers. Here's one of them now. Hello young lady, what can I do for you?
Hi! I'm here to pick up a delivery order!
Right, well, we don't do much online delivery stuff. You know, we're not set up for it. So your order's not quite ready, but it'll only be a second.
I'm losing money if I can't hold on!
Yeah, sorry. So this is a new job for you, right? How are you finding it?
Okay, it's not too bad. A bit dog-eat-dog. Not that I've ever had to deliver dog to anybody to eat, but I wouldn't be surprised if I did. Delivering humour.
Right.
But Alexi, for me, it's about trying to live a different life. In the past, I did terrible things myself, and I allowed others to do terrible things without stopping them.
Yeah, I guess you did, yeah.
I turned a blind eye to evil. I took part in dishonesty on a massive scale. There's blood on my hands, Alexi. But at least now I'm involved in honest work. Maybe one day I can make amends, but I've committed awful, awful awful, awful axe!
Okay. Here's your order.
All right, see you around!
Yeah, see you. That was Cressida Dick. Ex-Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police Force. There have been incidents of corruption and malpractice within the police force, especially the Metropolitan Police, for decades. And I can attest personally to this. An email out of the blue from a firm of solicitors is usually no welcome thing in my house. They usually go something like, "Dear sir, we are acting on behalf of our client, Tesco Metro, regarding an unpleasant deposit left in the jam aisle of their Oxford Street store last Friday, the 4th of June. But in this case, the email, which I received last year, was from somebody called Paul Heron, a solicitor at the Public Interest Law Centre. He told me he represents a number of core participants at the Undercover Policing Inquiry, commonly referred to as the Spy Cops Inquiry. This is a long-running investigation into undercover Met special branch officers who in the 80s and 90s infiltrated left-wing groups using false identities, sometimes beginning relationships with women in these groups, even to the extent of fathering children. Now, Paul Heron had come across an account from one of these undercover police spies who had attended a benefit for the unemployed I'd performed at in 1982, and he'd written a report. The solicitor told me that next to my name was an RF file number, and that file number meant that the special branch had been spying on me personally for years. The police spy had also included a review of the show. I personally found Mr. Sales' intellectual thug persona derivative and unconvincing. That I was being spied on did not come as a surprise. My parents were in the British Communist Party. When I was about six, we got a telephone, but my family believed, as a matter of course, that our phone was tapped by the security services. I was taught from an early age to maintain rigorous telephone security. So never use real names or give specific times. A friend from school would call and say, "Are you coming to football tomorrow?" And I'd reply, "The eagle is in the flower pot." But General de Gaulle doesn't have his underpants on. This often meant that me, my mum and dad went to places where we thought we'd arranged to meet people, only to find that they weren't there. But finding out that I really was being spied on for years started me thinking about the question of what are the police actually for? Now, I do believe we have some incredible institutions in Britain, like the Royal Mail, originally established in 1516, which still provides an amazing service. You know, the other day, I addressed a letter to some woman with a shirt, the house opposite the chip shop in the town where they have that thing. And you know, it was never delivered. The police force, while being almost as ancient an organisation, has always been more problematic. In 2019, the Home Office reported that only 7.8% of all crimes that were reported to the police resulted in a charge or summons. 7.8%. Imagine if the police were a biscuit factory.
Yes, sir, as a spokesperson for unwanted biscuits, we are proud to announce that 7.8% of the things that we make could legitimately be described as biscuits.
I also remember a report by Glasgow University in the early 80s that said the only time that the police affected the crime statistics was when they themselves committed crimes. And that most people arrested for crimes actually turned themselves in or were turned in by a relative. When Robert Mark was appointed Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police in the 1970s, he suggested his ambition was to make sure the Met arrested more criminals than they employed. The police face of this weird steampunk organisation that has never been reformed since it was founded in the Victorian era. Look at how many different ranks they have. Deputy Assistant Constable, Superintendent Inspector Sergeant, Chief Detective Constable Commander, and that's just the dogs. A lot of the things we think of as typically 1970s were in fact created by undercover police agents trying to impress their comrades and associates who were also in fact undercover police agents. In the 1970s, it transpired that not only was every left-wing party riddled with undercover special branch and police informers, all of them unknown to each other, so were all the central committees of the left-wing trade unions, but it went further. The Royal Institute of British Architects, the Arts Council, and the 1974 Leeds United squad. The failures of the police, to my mind, are systemic rather than coincidental. Because the police do not exist to protect us, the people, but are in reality an army of occupation for capitalism. And their job is to protect the interests of the rich and the powerful. But that's just me, you know. That's just what I think, you know what I mean? I mean, that's how I roll. They're a pound in bananas, darling, a pound of bananas. Lovely bananas, only a pound, buy me bananas. You're not laughing, is it? Unsettling this bit, I thought. You were too worrying, didn't it, really? As you got insane about bananas. But some police officers do seem to display a genuine impulse to look after, to protect people. A wild place I like to hang out is up the end of the Freeview box. The low numbers are all ordinary channels, BBC One and ITV2. But when you get to the 80s and 90s numbers, there's all kinds of mad channels like Talking Pictures, Zonk and Quest. A lot of these channels feature repeats from as much as 10 years ago, like ancient editions of Homes Under the Hammer. That's where people buy up repossessed properties sold at auction, or as I like to call it, profiting from human misery. And they show all these anachronistic interiors, homes that were last done up decades ago, with these weird features like the serving hatch. I mean, remember the serving hatch? It was like a little theatre for your food, wasn't it? But on channels such as Quest, there are loads of what some call copaganda, like 999, What's Your Emergency, or Police Interceptors. One I particularly like is The Force Manchester, which is all about policing the nighttime economy of Manchester. And in The Force Manchester, you see these police trying to cope with all these guys who are so drunk that they've lost the ability to talk, you know. They're just going, yeah, 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 yeah. The mistake the young coppers make is they try and talk to them. I'm like, I'm telling you, fella, if you don't stop messing about, you're going in the van, all right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They might as well be saying, now the essence of post-Hegelian philosophy. Yeah, 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 yeah. Now, the state grants the police force a monopoly of violence. Only the police are sanctioned to use violence. The philosophical idea behind this goes back to Thomas Hobbes's 1651 book, Leviathan. But the term as the defining conception of the state was first coined by the social democrat Max Weber early in the 20th century. Think of it though, you can join an organisation that has a state-sanctioned monopoly of violence. I mean, that's going to attract every authoritarian thug in the land, isn't it? Imagine the type of individual who'd be attracted to an organisation that had a monopoly of cider! Gustave Flaubert said, inside every revolutionary, there is a policeman. And I, for one, would give up all my criticism of the police if they'd just let me be one of them. I mean, I'd love to be an honorary traffic cop, you know. And there is a precedent. After all, the Memphis police made Elvis Presley an honorary narcotics cop, presumably on the basis that he had all the drugs in Tennessee already inside him. And I'm qualified. I've seen every single episode of The Bill. And I know all the jargon. Rotac, that's a road traffic accident. Gotac, that's a road traffic accident involving a goat. This Thursday has been designated National Scientist Awareness Day. Now, I was all ready to become more aware of scientists in any way that I could, when I suddenly noticed that next Thursday, as well as being National Scientist Awareness Day, is also National Ride to Work Day, when commuters are urged to cycle or motorbike to work in order to lift pollution and to ease congestion. And I don't know what to do, learn more about scientists or ride to work. I took part in the Ride to Work event last year, and there's still a 1200cc Harley Davidson wedged in our downstairs lavatory. After I tried to ride to work from my bedroom to the office, which is in the basement. However, Thursday is not only National Ride to Work Day, it also happens to be UK Banana Day, as well as being 1/7 of Chicken Pox Awareness Week. And 1/365 of the International Year of the Environmentally Aware. These special days, weeks and years do serve a vital function in that they draw attention to important issues. Unfortunately, however, because of their usefulness, there is now a logjam. Therefore, what I propose is that all special days will have to be combined so that, for example, the 14th of May will become National Ride to Work on Somebody with Chickenpox Day. The benefits of this will be severalfold. The two sets of interests will share the spoils equally, commuters will still travel to work in an environmentally undamaging way, plus they will learn a lot more about the disease by striking up a conversation with a chickenpox sufferer who is carrying them in on their backs from Surbiton. As usual, every day from January the 1st to December 31st will be Being Governed by a Gang of Criminals Day. One of the techniques the undercover cops used to seduce people, particularly women, was mirroring. So if you said, "I like reggae," they'd say, "I like reggae." If you said, "I'm really into swimming," they'd say, "Oh, I'm really into swimming too." If you said, "I'm crazy about Jack Whitehall," they'd say, "You're on your own there, mate." The spy cops obtain their false personas by assuming the identities of dead children, children who had often passed away a long time ago, like in the Victorian era. Now, you'd think left-wing groups might have been a bit suspicious when a 20-year-old, supposedly called Uriah Cratchit, said they wanted to be an anarchist. Or a woman called Peggotty Fezziwig told them she was really into third-wave feminism. "God blimey, I do believe intersectional identity politics provides an analytical framework for understanding different modes of discrimination and privilege. So I do." "Step me past the Barnsley shop, call me a handsome cab and take me to Limehouse, dearie." I'll tell you another identity of a police agent who has been given the task of sabotaging socialism and legitimate protest. An identity that has been stolen from a dead Victorian child. And that is Keir Starmer. I mean, who's called Keir Starmer in the 21st century? He's clearly an undercover cop. Keir Starmer is obviously the name of a tuberculous six-year-old chimney sweep who died at the time of the Battle of Inkerman. I think when Jeremy Corbyn lost the 2019 general election, I honestly believe I went through the Kubler-Ross seven stages of grieving. Anger, depression, pissing yourself in a Tesco Metro, bargaining, denial, starting a fight with a wombat at Chessington World of Adventures. And acceptance. Though I'm still struggling with that last one, acceptance. In the words of Emperor Hirohito of Japan in his first ever address to the nation after the US had dropped the atomic bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, he said, "The war situation has developed not necessarily to Japan's advantage." Similarly, the election situation has not developed to our advantage unless you're a thieving Tory bastard. We on the left are mourning the death of the idea that we have a media in this country that is in any way fair, unbiased, or balanced. If you take away some letters and add in some other letters, then Laura Koonsberg is actually an anagram of lying Tory stooge. And ITV's Robert Peston is so biased towards the establishment. If this was North Korea, he'd be on the TV reading the news in a pink kimono. Also, there are these incestuous networks of friendship and family that connect the media and politics. Boris Johnson's ex-spokesperson, Allegra Stratton, is married to the political editor of the right-wing Spectator magazine. Jacob Rees-Mogg goes to Tai Chi with ITV's Lorraine Kelly. And the brother of Channel 4 newsreader Krishnan Gudamurthy is married to Liz Truss's sister's horse. And the Guardian newspaper, which sometimes pretends to be left-wing, often led the attacks on the left. I got my revenge, though. I read The Guardian online, and you regularly get this appeal that comes up that says, you've read 67 articles. Then ask you to subscribe. Well, bollocks to that. I just read these thousands and thousands of articles in The Guardian, you know, and I never pay for them. Columns by Polly Toynbee, so sanctimonious they make your eyes bleed. They haven't got a penny out of me. George Bush's supremely evil political strategist, Karl Rove, suggested that you attack your enemies not where they are weakest, but you attack their strengths. So there was a campaign to paint the left in general as racist. But in my opinion, the whole notion of left-wing racism is largely a nonsense. Us left-wingers only hate two groups of people, capitalists and other left-wing people. Where would we find the time for racism? We're too busy attacking each other. Certainly, historically, regimes that present as left-wing have collapsed into murderous, cruel authoritarianism, but that is because we want everybody to love each other, even if they have to be shot. Or put into gulags to force them to do it. The hunt for left-wing racism is the hunt for the weapons of mass destruction of our day. And it is often the same people making the accusations. A real racist is a right-wing racist, like Tommy Robinson, who just spews out obvious and explicit hatred all the time. It's weird, isn't it, though, really? I mean, in the 80s, Tommy Robinson was singing about how he was glad to be gay. I spent some time in Syria in the 1990s, and on the hotel TV, there were a surprising number of different channels. But this appearance of choice was an illusion. Each channel featured only one person, the president, Hafez al-Assad. You switch to a station, Assad. Another station, there he is again, Assad. Of course, we have something similar in Britain. They're called Romesh Ranganathan. On Syrian TV, you'd have 8 out of 10 jihadis do countdown with President Assad. President Assad and Rob Beckett go off to crush Kurdish independence. But really, I can see very little difference between UK TV and Syrian TV. The same uniformity of opinion, the same tiny circle of commentators, the same lies that are never challenged, the same political stagnation. Because my wife Linda joined the Labour Party for 5 years during Jeremy's leadership, I got to meet some of those on the right of the party. And they are just the most horrible people in the world. It's like in the 60s and 70s, you used to get these ads in the back of music papers, like the NME and the Melody Makers, saying, like, prog rock band looking for a drummer, must be really into Rick Wakeman, Tubular Bells and flared trousers. With the Labour Party, it's like somebody's put an advert in the paper saying, organisation of bastards, looking for some complete bastards, must be really into being a bastard. And Starmer is the only MP who's in this weird right-wing worldwide organisation called the Trilateral Commission, a fact that the press never mentioned. Now, when you say this, people go, oh, false news, propaganda, conspiracy theory, conspiracy theory.
But it's not a conspiracy theory, it's a conspiracy fact. The word conspiracy exists because people do, on occasion, conspire together to achieve their ends. The space aliens who gave the English language to King Arthur on a series of golden tablets at Camelot did not bother inventing words for things that did not exist. Apart from unicorns, ghosts, and Nigel Farage's penis. Starmer and his allies are waging a war on the left of the Labour Party, and it makes you wonder what kind of stuff he got up to when he was Director of Public Prosecutions. Like, you remember when Mr. Blobby was shot dead at a Radio 1 roadshow by a squad of armed police, and Starmer refused to prosecute the commander of that squad, who was, of course, Cressida Dick. Now you see you've forgotten that as well, haven't you? The left never stood a chance. Sun Tzu said in The Art of War, to never wage war using wishful thinking. But wishful thinking is sort of a precondition of being left-wing. The right are ruthless in getting behind one single leader. They have no problem putting all their eggs in one bastard. But the left often become bogged down in process. You can always rely on the left to turn up to a knife fight armed with a composite motion. But I'm not like that. I'm focused. I'm a realist. And so I've sunk all my money into a Hamilton-style hip-hop musical about an elderly backbench Islington MP who's no longer any part of the conversation. It's entitled Jeremy!
Into the craven world of the career politician walks a man with a vision and a mission, a man in the much-derided socialist tradition. Of course they jeered, they were jealous of his beard. Into the swamp of venal real politic, so full of traitors, it literally makes me sick, comes a man who's not afraid to stand on a picket line with a union banner in his hand. A CND badge where you might have a car key and a flask of milky coffee in case it gets parky. This is a peacenik. Yes, he has a passion for protesting the invading and raiding of subjugated nations. Yes, he objected to the gross proliferating of weapons of global annihilation. I guess that makes him Satan. Yes, he's old school, but have you seen the new one? Anyone who thinks the nation's doing well can do one. I'm Team Jeremy, Jeremy Corbs. He's funny, he's fluffy, he's totally adorbs. His eyes are bewitching and his rhetoric's absorbing. Why did we deny you, Jeremy Corbyn? You think I'm naive, you think I'm in denial. You think I'd like to drag Tony Blair to a Stalin-style show trial. That would make me smile, well maybe just a little. But in the meanwhile, I'm Team Jeremy, Team Jez Corbo. I'd like to serenade him on the Theorbo. His gaze is blazing and his tailoring's absorbing. Why did they betray you, Comrade Corbyn?
Jeremy, Jeremy, Jeremy.
Corbyn!
You may or may not have been listening to Alexis Ellis' Imaginary Sandwich Bar. Thank you, good night!
Alexi Sale's Imaginary Sandwich Bar was written and performed by Alexi Sale, with original music and lyrics from Tim Sutton. The producer was Joe Nunnery, and it was a BBC Studios production.